Small Town Podcast is made possible by generous support from the Georgia Municipal Association. GMA supports Georgia cities. Small Town Podcast is supported by Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company. Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company is a full-line supplier of products for the water, wastewater, and natural gas industries, and they serve utilities and public works departments in cities, large and small, every day. As a family-owned company with a legacy that began in 1960, let Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company show you that they are dedicated to service.
I hereby call this episode to order.
Hey, small towners, it's Mayor Matt Seal, and thanks for joining me for another episode of Small Town Podcast. Now, if you've been a listener of Small Town Podcast for a while, you know that I've had the pleasure of traveling to states other than my own home state of Georgia to explore and share great small towns. My two road trips to the state of Louisiana have allowed me to visit about a dozen small towns in that state. Well, the popularity of the podcast there and my growing relationship with the Louisiana Municipal Association have allowed me to make Louisiana small towns a regular part of Small Town Podcast. There'll be so many in this season that a special road trip series just won't do, so you'll be hearing regular episodes from Louisiana small towns throughout this season. Today, we visit a small town that is so far north of Louisiana, it's almost in Arkansas. And we talk to a mayor who was mentored into retiring from his career to continue the leadership of his small town. We're going to go talk with Mayor Ray Huddleston in the small town of Spring Hill, Louisiana. Come go with me. Growing up in coastal Georgia, I only thought I lived in a small town. As soon as I graduated high school, I moved to the big city of Atlanta for college and to start my life. But life is a journey, and I ended up in Ocilla, Georgia. Population 3,400. We've got two traffic lights here. We're not looking to get a third anytime soon. Some years later, the people of Ocilla made me their mayor. Man, I love living in a small town. Other folks do too. This is the Small Town Podcast, and I'm your host, Mayor Matt Seal of the great city of Ocilla, Georgia. Small Town Podcast is sponsored by the Greater Harrelson Chamber of Commerce. When looking around for your next small town adventure, you should consider Harrelson County, Georgia. With four small towns, each with their own unique character, Harrelson County has all the charm and warmth of a rural community. Located just 1 hour from the heart of Atlanta, Harrelson County also offers access to the amenities of the big city. In Harrelson County, Georgia, you can enjoy taking a brisk walk among historic homes, eating lunch at one-of-a-kind restaurants, shopping for unique products lovingly curated by one of many local entrepreneurs. And the recreational opportunities are endless, including leisurely floats down the Tallapoosa River and attending some of the many outdoor festivals. Make plans to visit Harrelson County, Georgia today, and you just may decide to stay. For more information, visit harrelson.org. That's HARALSON.org. Harrelson County. You're a one-hour drive to a nonstop flight to anywhere in the world, but once you're here, you might not want to go anywhere else. All right. I am now in, it looks like the board of directors meeting room at the Chamber of Commerce in North Webster Parish. We're in Louisiana, obviously, and everyone knows that now because I said parish instead of county. Yeah, I say county. We're in Spring Hill, Louisiana, and I am sitting at the table with the mayor of Spring Hill, Louisiana, Mayor Ray Huddleston. So, Mayor Huddleston, thanks for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Yeah, welcome to Spring Hill. We say we're the gateway to Arkansas because our our city limits is the Louisiana state line, but we want you to go to the city limits and not go any further.
I knew I was close. I knew I was close. In fact, fun fact, I didn't tell you this before we got going. I stayed nearby here in an Airbnb last night before we set up this morning. And when I drove up in the evening, the couple that lived next door, the gentleman came over and just let me know. He said, "Hey, I'm sorry to be in your yard. We got a hog that got loose
That's
and we're trying to catch him and he's running around in your backyard." I said, "Well, it's not my backyard," or I guess it is for the night, but But so, yeah, I said,
that's some Arkansas people.
Hogs running around. I said, we must be close to Arkansas. So the northern boundary of the city limits.
City limits goes is straight into Arkansas line.
I knew I was close. I didn't realize how close.
Yeah, we got Montgomery Drive. And if you live on this side, you're in Louisiana. Other side, you're in Arkansas.
Wow. You can drive like on a main thoroughfare or something like that, but you've got it just
the yellow line.
Residential area.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah. So you got people that walk across the street and they're just crossing.
That's right.
They're in another state boundaries.
Another state. Yeah.
That's fun. Well, we want to talk more about Spring Hill, but first I always want to start and get to know the person I'm talking to. So I'll start with the same question I asked all my guests, and that's, were you born in Spring Hill, Louisiana?
I was born in Spring Hill, Louisiana in 1950. And my family goes back here. He was one of the, G.L. Cobb was one of the original settlers of Spring Hill in 1902. He came in 1890-something, but the town was incorporated in 1902. And he bought the first car ever bought in Spring Hill in 1908. I got a picture of it in my office. But he was a businessman, and he did a lot to promote Spring Hill and the sawmill. The sawmill's what started Spring Hill. It was originally called Barefoot, is what they originally called.
That's what they called, but they didn't incorporate it as that. They decided to change the name.
But they decided when they incorporated that, it just didn't sound right. Because we're in the hills and we're in springs, a lot of springs around here. So they decided Spring Hill. So I'm glad they did.
I will say that was some good marketing effort on their part. Spring Hill mm-hmm. does bring more of a better image than Barefoot.
Barefoot.
But why barefoot? Just because
I don't
did
know.
People walk around a lot with no shoes?
Yep, they did, I guess. I don't know why they
came up with that name. That'd be dangerous in a sawmill.
We call it Barefoot. But anyway.
Well, I'm glad they changed the name to Spring Hill before they incorporated it.
The timber, you know, surrounds the town. And so he got involved with the sawmill. And then later, you know, we got the paper mill in the 30s.
Yeah.
So, but my family goes way back here. And, of course, I graduated from school here. And I went into banking here. I was the president of Spring Hill Bank for a long, long time. I was in banking for 46 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And retired from banking to run for mayor. But while I was in banking, I was on the city council for eight years.
Well, let me take it back a little bit. Talk about a good portion of the people I talked to on Small Town Podcast, they were born and raised and have a similar story where the family's been here a while. So because that's the case, talk about what life was like growing up, how things change as far as the size and some of the things. Obviously, your industry is because of timber, and there's still some of that industry here. But
I grew up in Pine Hill, which is a subdivision of Spring Hill, which was built by International Paper.
Okay.
Because the people that came here it was so many people coming, there wasn't any place for them to live.
Oh.
So they built a whole subdivision.
Okay.
But they built it right under the smokestack and the paper mill.
Oh, no.
So as little boys, we didn't know any different. All we had was a blue jeans and T-shirt to go to school. We'd wait for the bus. Well, when we got to school, people knew where we lived because we had liquor. We called it liquor that fell from the sky
from the
paper mill, you know, pollution.
Yeah.
And our little T-shirts would be all covered in brown.
So they weren't white T-shirts by the time you got to school.
They were like little brown spots all over
them.
But they knew where we were from. But we were proud to be from Pine Hill because we were all of our friends were there. We were all the same age. And it was a fun time.
I imagine that was kind of a close-knit neighborhood since...
It was.
Obviously, a neighborhood is usually close-knit anyway, but everybody there worked in the same spot, and the families were all there because of the
International Paper. And we all had
one vehicle,
and so we didn't go very much. You go to town once a week, you know, and that kind of
thing. You carpool.
But yeah.
Yeah, no choice. There's only one.
You caught the bus to school, so... Yeah, it was a fun time. We didn't know any different.
And there was because we're in the same parish as Sarepta.
Yes.
And so we've interviewed Mayor Peggy Adkins from Sarepta on a previous episode. So she talked about kind of the school consolidation, but every community had its own high school. So
yes.
I imagine that was the case when you were coming through.
Yes.
So it was Spring Hill High, or was it
Spring Hill High School? The Lumberjacks.
You know, I saw that, I think, on the
water tower
coming up.
It's still there because it hadn't been painted yet since we changed to the Knights.
I'm pretty sure that the water tower in Sarepta still says Sarepta Hornets.
Hornets, it does.
So everyone's kind of kept that identity, even though the schools
are consolidated. It costs a lot to paint a water tank.
That's true. I actually know about that. I've talked to the guys in Osceola that had to
do that. I was shocked to find out how much it costs to paint one that big.
Yeah, you might as well just leave it as it. As long as it looks good, you keep it that way. As long as you can.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
After graduating high school, what did you do then?
I went to Louisiana Tech.
Okay.
And
That's down in Ruston.
In Ruston.
Yeah.
I commuted because I didn't have the money, really, my parents didn't, to send me down there. So there was a bus that came to Spring Hill and took you to Louisiana Tech every day.
How far of a drive is that? I'm trying to think.
It's about
a little over an hour, it seems like.
50 minutes, about an hour.
Okay.
And
so every day you rode an hour-long bus.
It stopped in Minden
okay.
and picked up people. That's where I met my wife. She got on the bus in Minden.
Okay.
So we met on the bus going to Tech.
So commuting to college turned out to be very good for you.
Yeah,
that's how you met your wife. If you lived in Ruston the whole time, wouldn't it work out?
She was from Minden, which was a big rival of Spring Hill. We didn't like Minden people. But on the bus, we did.
So you were skeptical at first, but you came to like her?
Yeah. I realized they were just people like we are. Yeah. But we were... It's not that way anymore. We don't have the rivals we used to in football.
Right.
That's where it came from in
football. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, we have those in South Georgia, too.
Yeah. But it's not the same anymore.
So what did you get a degree in at Louisiana Tech?
Accounting.
Okay.
Accounting.
Well, that makes sense going into banking, mm-hmm. I suppose.
Yeah.
And then came back here in Spring Hill to start your career after college?
I went to work at a finance company
okay.
at first because I was desperate to find a job. And I wondered why they were hired me so quick, and they didn't have a collector there mm-hmm. at the finance company, but they hired me, and I wondered, it was a new finance company. I thought, well,
where was it?
In Ruston.
In Ruston, okay, yeah. So right there with the school.
And so he hired me real quick. I've come to find out he had put a lot of bad loans on the books, and he had needed a collector real bad.
Okay.
So therefore, the places I went to were not too safe. I remember one night he said, you've got to get this loan renewed now. You go to Dubok and you get it done. Well, it was about 11 o'clock at night, and I didn't have any better sense at the time. You know, I was making big money, $700 a month. You know, I was making big money. So I drove my little Volkswagen up to Dubok, and I beat on the door. I said, this is Ray Huddleston with Security Finance or whatever it was, and they said, come ahead. I thought, oh, okay. So I went, it's a little shotgun house. I went in, and then wasn't nobody in that room, and they said, come ahead. Okay, so I opened the next door, and there were two people in the bed, and all I saw was a gun. And they come jumped out of the bed and chased me with a gun.
Oh,
all I
goodness.
Heard was a shot when I was driving the little Volkswagen off. And I said, you know what, Ray? $700 is a lot of money, but we need to find something
else. A little safer. I'll take a little less for a little more
security.
That's
when I went to banking, and I was a collector to bank. Then I became loan officer and worked my way up through years and years of not making any money to be the president of the bank.
But hopefully you never got shot at again because of a loan.
Never.
That was
totally
the only time.
Different clientele of folks.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Well, now, so so that was working out of Ruston, but the first banking job you took, was it back here in Spring Hill?
It was in Hainesville.
Okay.
Which is about 18 miles.
So still nearby.
Here,
yeah.
And then I stayed there a little while and then came here for the rest of the time.
So
I've never been far away.
Well, and I was going to ask that. So you've stayed close, but uh-huh. when you graduated high school, you went to Louisiana Tech, and even mm-hmm. though you still lived at home, you were going somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Little bigger city, Ruston.
Right.
Any thoughts of, hey, Spring Hill's great and all, but I'd rather go somewhere else, or do you always know you want to come home?
It's something about the hometown deal, you know, that just drags you back there. You want to, I guess it was so much fun growing up that you remember all that,
yeah.
you know,
and yeah.
you want to have that again.
Oh, yeah.
You may not get to, but you want to, you know.
Yeah,
and I did. I've had fun here. I had fun at the bank, a lot of fun. The clientele of people you deal with there, everybody's on their best behavior because they're wanting to borrow some money. You know,
they got the best foot forward.
And then I get to City Hall, and it ain't quite that way, as you well know. People come in there, they're mad.
That's
you know?
Right. They're not worried about putting the best foot forward.
That's one of my...
You got to put your best foot forward.
My attributes is calming people down and helping solve their problems and knowing if I was in their position, I'd be upset too.
Yeah.
You know, so...
Well, let's talk about that. You said you were on city council before you were the mayor. So when did you first run for city council and what was your motivation for it?
I was at the bank and my father image. My daddy died when I was real young. And I had a guy here that was the mayor for many years, Johnny Harrington. And he's like the father of the town kind of deal,
yeah.
you know, but he took me in. He was a director of the bank where I was the banker too. So mm-hmm. he took me in and he kind of became a father image to me. We went places together and we cared a lot about each other. And so he was the mayor for many years, and he encouraged me to get on the city council, and he always wanted me to be one of these days to be the mayor. Of course, okay. He died a little after I was on the city council, but he always wanted me to be the mayor. So
when did you first run for city council?
It was back probably in the 90s.
Okay.
For 8 years.
Okay.
So most of the 90s.
And I'm gonna have to ask this because I'm so used to counties and small mm-hmm. cities in Georgia and other states where the things are a little different. Now you guys, there's cities, towns, and villages. You guys are mm-hmm. a town.
We are a city.
You're a city, so you're above mm-hmm. 5,000 population. If I remember that correctly.
We're 20. At our last census,
yeah.
We're 20 short,
okay.
But nobody has sent right. us any notification.
And we actually talked about that with Peggy Atkins.
Okay.
I actually remember, if you go back and listen to that episode, because I left it in there instead of uh-huh. editing out, I mistakenly called it a village. She said town.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
She made sure to correct me real yeah. quick. But she said the same thing. The population to be a town has to be at least 1,000, but less than 5.
Right.
They drop below, but they don't come back right. and kind of yank that status.
Because, you know, there could be errors there or
sure,
whatever.
Sure, so. It leaves at least a margin if it's close to it.
The
like
difference
that.
In a city on the grants and stuff, a city qualifies for, like, say, 50,000,
yep.
where a town qualifies for 35,000.
Right.
So it makes a difference.
So because you're a city, I remember, I think it's 3 council members if you're a village, 5 if you're a town, and 7 if you're a city. Is that
well,
right?
Well, no, we're 5.
Oh, it is 5.
5
okay.
is a city.
Okay. Maybe it's 5-4-3. I got to brush
we're,
up on my
we're
my
under
state.
The Larson Act.
Okay.
We're under the Larson Act.
See, it's so different over here.
We
I have
are.
To learn all this.
We are different.
I need to review with Karen White. That's what I usually,
yeah,
usually
that's
do.
Right.
She instructed me, and I have to brush up on my...
We're the only one that... We're so different than all the other states.
Yeah. Makes it interesting. Well, if you cross that, what did you say, Montgomery Street? They see, cross the street, and they have a completely yeah. different
well,
setup
because they're as in Arkansas. A banker, see, as a banker, we had customers in Taylor, Arkansas, which is 5 miles
right.
from here.
Next town up.
So
just happens to be across the state
you
line.
You had to be familiar with Arkansas law and Louisiana law.
Oh, yeah.
And same... Not as near as much as the mayor, but you've got to be kind of familiar. Of
sure.
course, it comes in handy. I was the banker because
you,
I do
you
know
already
a lot
well
about,
versed about it because
about
of that.
That law. So it is different.
So you said five council members.
Yes.
And
yes.
are those remind me? Are those all at large? Do they have different districts?
They have different districts.
Okay.
There's 5 different districts. As a matter of fact, today we are getting redistricted. They're
yeah.
moving the lines
because
a little
the population,
bit.
The census
the population
coming out.
Yep. changed from the census. So. He's moving it. It's the guy we hired to watch that and take care of us there. But we're changing that today.
Okay.
But you have 5 districts, and they're all elected by their district.
Mm-hmm.
I'm elected by all
right. You're at large,
the people
as the mayor.
At large, and so is the chief of police.
That's right. That's the other thing that's different. And we referenced yeah. that in our conversation before
the
mics.
He's the chief of
the
police,
mics.
And I don't have anything to do with the day-to-day running of the police department,
right.
but we provide the money. We provide the budget for the police department.
And it's probably this way at the parish level. In Georgia, the county level, the sheriff of the county
yes.
is an elected position.
Yes.
But the county commission is the one that's supposed to fund because the taxes are received by the county. And so the funding for everything the sheriff needs to provide the security
mm-hmm.
and law enforcement.
The police jury.
Yeah. So, yeah, you have that, which is funny. That's called police jury,
mm-hmm.
which is the parish government.
Right.
but then
right.
you have a police department with an elected police chief. So,
right.
Well, I say it's funny. It's probably normal to you. And the way
yeah,
we do, it's
yeah.
funny to you.
That's all we know.
that's right. It's just different. It's
yeah.
not weird
that's all
or funny.
You know.
It's just
that's
different.
All you know.
Yeah. Different than each other. So you said 8 years on the city
mm-hmm.
council.
Yes.
And anything particular? It sounds like you were mentored essentially and encouraged to do
yes.
that just as kind of a civic duty. But was there
yeah.
any particular, I guess, initiatives or things you wanted to focus on, specific department you wanted to see some changes in as a council member?
As councilman, I was mostly following what he wanted to do, supporting the mayor.
Because he was the mayor when you first got on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He'd been there for 4 terms, I think.
Okay.
But he had some great ideas. So we all supported him. All the councilmen did.
Yeah.
Like the clock you see out there in the triangle.
Yeah.
That was his idea. Nobody wanted to do it. But he said, yeah, we're going to do it.
Well, it's just a nice little, it's not a square. It's just a triangle.
It's
just
a triangle.
Grassy
it's
and
beautiful.
Nice sign. And just, yeah, center of town looking thing.
He went to Branson for some period that he wasn't the mayor. He started a theater in Branson.
Oh, wow.
And was real successful with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that clock is in Branson. So
okay.
he saw it there and he got one.
It's
brought,
a replica.
Brought it here, yeah.
Okay.
And he also got a grant through Foster Campbell for $1 million to redo the old A&P building and turn it into a Branson Theater.
Oh, wow.
So we have a Branson Theater, which just had a performance Saturday night of Jamboree performance. But he used to bring, because the friends of his were Willie Nelson, Loretta Lynn.
I've heard Brendan of these Lee. People.
they were all friends of
wow.
his because of his connection
yeah.
there. So they so would come here and perform because wow. they were friends.
Wow.
That's the only reason. I can't get them here. But it was terribly successful, you know, because of him.
Yeah.
He made it successful.
Yeah.
Of course, we have the Civic Center, too, which is a beautiful building. And it was built because in the heyday of the paper mill,
mm-hmm.
money. I mean, we were a town of 10,000 people.
Yeah.
And we're now 5, but we had a lot of money. And the mill promoted the Civic Center and helped us pay for it. You know, stuff like that helps you improve the town where you normally might not could. But
yeah.
But we had the population to do it then. So we have these venues that most little towns do not have.
Right. Yeah.
Magnolia doesn't even have.
A lot because of him and his connections yeah. and his ability to, right. to do that. That's right. Awesome.
He did a tremendous amount for this town.
You said he passed away?
Yes.
In office?
No, he wasn't in office.
Not in office. Okay.
But he passed away about 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay. Ago. So it was another mayor that you worked under as yes. a council member.
Carol Brough.
And then I guess, are your terms 4 years as a council mm-hmm. member? Okay. Mm-hmm. So after two mm-hmm. terms, you decided to run for mayor. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. tell me about that. What was the motivation to do that? Did you have to run against the incumbent or was that an open seat?
No. I went to him and said, I'm retiring from the bank. And because of my age, now is the time for me to run for mayor. And he had been either a city council and he was grandfathered as a city council and a mayor. He had almost 30 years.
Oh, wow.
And so he was able to retire at full salary. He said,
okay.
I was fixing to retire.
From city government?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, that's one of the huge benefits.
Yeah.
The retirement's unbelievable. So he was ready to go home anyway.
Yeah.
So I ran. I did have a person run against me. But I won like 75-80% of the votes. So I guess they thought the banker could take care of their money. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that speaks well of you. So,
well,
how many terms have you had since then? Because you've done this for a little while.
No. This is my – I'm fixing to run this summer
okay.
for my second term.
Second term. So you're just in your first
full – I'm in my first full term.
But you've been essentially 12 years between council and mayor.
Right.
Got it.
Right.
Okay.
It's been a trip, that's for sure. It's a lot more pressure and a lot harder job than I had as president of the bank, believe it or not.
Well, I do believe that.
Well, you would.
I've been in your shoes.
I mean, it is very hard.
Yeah.
And
you're balancing a lot of, at least at the bank, everyone's priorities are roughly the same.
Yeah.
People want to borrow money, and the bank wants to lend money, and so right. you just got to work out some details.
Right.
At the city, everybody's priorities are different.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to make everybody's priority your number one priority.
Yeah, and everything is different every day.
Yeah, yeah. New and, set of problems all the time.
You know, and I'm thinking, golly, you know, I'm making a third what I was making, one third, and working twice as much,
yeah.
you know.
But it's considered fine. A full-time job and
there's
benefits and everything. So yeah.
Some of these smaller villages like Peggy and Taylor, Arkansas, and Haynesville, they can be more part-time, but mm-hmm. but not this one.
Not a town of 5,000.
Well, because, see, we're really not a town of 5,000 because we did the hospital, which we have a number 5. We're 5 hospitals. In Louisiana, we're in those top 5 hospitals.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, it's pretty impressive.
Now, are you
place.
The parish seat?
No, Minden is.
Okay. Oh, Minden's still in the same parish. Okay.
Yeah, Minden is.
But you got some pull there because your wife's from Minden.
Yeah, there you go. My son lives in Minden, too.
Okay. There you go. Make sure you get in a good word with the police jury because that's where
yeah,
they meet, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Everything's in Minden.
Well,
we're the stepchild.
Tell me this because you actually referenced, you know, things used to be bigger. And then you mm-hmm. just referenced being a little below that 5,000 population line.
But see, we have a trade area of 27,000 people.
Well, you've got a good bit of industry as I came into town mm-hmm. from the south coming towards the Arkansas yeah. state line.
But we're right in the dead middle of Sarepta, Haynesville, Taylor, Cotton Valley. You know, all these little towns, Plain Dealing,
mm-hmm.
they're all right in.
Yeah,
we're right
I rode
in the
through
middle.
Cullen to get here too. Cullen
yeah.
yeah.
yeah. We've got the Walmart. We've got everything that
right. You're kind of a commercial hub. Mm-hmm. So even though you don't necessarily have the population, the population comes from the other places for commercial reasons.
Yes.
So there's a lot of services you've got to provide even to people that don't
live here.
When
you drive through here, you think, gosh, this is a lot of people live here. You know, it's busy right. all day right. long. But then
at the end of the day, a lot of those people go home somewhere else.
Yeah, they do. They do.
So they pay their property taxes to somebody
else. Yeah, they do.
And you're collecting different kinds of sales tax. Right, yeah. right. So you're at least getting some of that.
During the pandemic, you know, we never were off a bit on sales tax or anything like that.
Well, smaller towns, rural communities.
People stayed home.
I think maybe in some of those sales tax areas, and we wouldn't wish the pandemic on anybody, but the natural reaction was if you stayed closer to home and you weren't going to, we're not too far from Shreveport, so people probably go there to go out for a night on the big city. Well, if you didn't do that, you stayed closer to home, and so your restaurant, retail,
you bought groceries,
got a lot more of a boost because people weren't going.
That's what we
outside
noticed
outside the parish. Yeah,
you know, it was the opposite for us.
Similar types of things in counties in South Georgia.
It went up.
Too.
Our sales tax went up. Yeah. So,
well, tell me about the population because you said it's gone down. So, how far down did it go from 10 years ago?
20 years ago, it was about 10,000.
Oh wow! So you've cut in half just in 20 years. Okay, that much, and that's just kind
of paper mill left.
Right, the reduction of industry.
Once it left,
it's not coming back.
And
it's hard to replace one big industry.
Yeah.
Do you remember how many jobs I'm putting you on
the
spot?
2,000.
And that was just 2,000 jobs.
2,000 families.
Yeah.
Represented there.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
Times three or four.
And you're not bringing something new. To a rural area in today's global economy to replace that many jobs. You can try to do some of it. You might be able to get someone to buy some of the property, but it's not going to be that.
We do have an industrial park out here, and they have brought some industry in. Like there's one really big plant out there. It's called CSP, Continental Structural Plastics, from up north.
Yeah.
And they came here. They make parts for Toyota and different car dealerships. And they've done fantastic. They have 250 people working there.
Okay.
And the industrial park just paid to enlarge their deal. And
looks like plenty of activity in this area. It's not, again, it's going to be hard to replace 2,000 jobs.
Tie mill out there. They make plastic ties, make for the railroads.
Okay.
It's out of plastic. So
they
employ a few people. And then there's another industry, A.E. Williams. They supply stuff for, big companies out of Minden. We used to have Train, the air conditioning people. They moved to Mexico.
T-R-A-N-E, not T-R-A-I-N-E.
They were huge.
Yeah.
But they left.
That's some of the struggles. Some of the big companies that have that many jobs, when they restructure and take out of a more rural area, there are not a lot of people looking to, hey, can we put a plant in your place and employ 2,000 people?
Well, I mean, we are 30 miles north of interstate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're probably going to locate Minden.
People are going to get a little closer.
Interstate,
you know? Yeah.
And so it's harder for like Spring Hill and then over in Hainesville. They're the same way over there.
Right.
That Homer's the parish seat over there. So people are going to gravitate more toward that parish seat. It's not going anywhere, but it's just harder to get it up here. But we keep trying.
Yeah.
We keep trying.
Well, tell you what, I want to talk more about Spring Hill, but I do want to do, I've done this segment, I keep thinking I'll change it up, but it's so much fun. It's some get-to-know-you questions to help our audience get to know you in some different ways. So I got four questions for you.
Okay.
The first one is, do you now have or have you ever had a nickname?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah. Well, tell us what it is.
Well, my name is William Ray.
Okay.
And when I went to work at a bank, this guy, he loved to drink. Yeah, that was his big deal. He had a bar in his office.
Oh.
In the bank.
Okay.
And so he would holler at me every day. He started calling me Willie Ray. Hey, Willie Ray, come here. I make me a drink.
So he called, Willie Ray was his bartender?
That was his bartender. So I know that meant for me to go
it
make him
time to come
drink.
In. Did that mean he just did some good business and he was celebrating?
Yeah.
Or was it good to go talk?
That's every day.
So maybe it was good to go talk to him. He'd be a lot easier to get a loan from.
Yeah, boy.
After.
Yeah. That was in the old days. That was back in the late 70s,
I was gonna say,
early 80s.
Assure everybody that's not how it works.
That's not the way it works anymore.
But in times gone by, that was more acceptable.
Yeah, back in the old days.
Wow.
Yeah.
So Willie Ray.
Willie Ray.
And that was the only guy that called you that, or did everyone at the bank start calling?
No, then everybody started calling me that.
People come in looking for Willie Ray at the bank?
Yeah.
I was told to come ask for a Willie Ray.
Yeah. And my grandmother, for some reason, she used to call me that too.
So. Okay, so came from two different places.
That was my nickname, yeah.
He didn't know about your grandmother calling you that when he was calling for his bartender.
No, but a friend of mine who worked with me knew that that's what she called me.
Oh, okay.
I told him.
I got you. So it really was your grandmother.
It really went back to her.
And then he just got it going again at the bank.
Right,
got it. Willie Ray. Any others?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay, not that you know of.
No. No, there's no telling.
All right, next question. What would be your go-to karaoke song? We're at a karaoke bar. It's karaoke night. Maybe in the 70s, you did karaoke in the office when they were calling for Willie Ray.
I wouldn't do it, but Dolly Parton's I'll Always Love You. I just love that song.
Well, you should do that one. That would be...
Shoot, I can't do nothing.
The crowd would go wild if you did that song karaoke.
I have a daughter.
If you can hold out that last note goodness gracious.
I have a daughter and a granddaughter.
Yeah.
That sing. And boy, you talking about something.
So you'd probably push them on stage in your place.
I
you're
do.
Saying.
Yeah. My granddaughter just won at Bird High School in Shreveport, just had a big talent contest, and she won the thing hands down the other night. So I mean, she's something else. She's going to Northwestern, and they gave her a scholarship down there in choir. So
good.
She's going to go far, I think.
I'm sure that she would still enjoy watching you sing karaoke.
Nobody would enjoy that.
No, that's not true.
I remember I was growing up, and Miss Cooper was the music teacher.
Yeah.
And I was singing with everybody in the choir, you know. And she came and had a ruler and took my hand and pop, pop,
slapped your knuckles.
She said, "We don't do that in here. We don't make fun of this." And I said, "Wait a minute. I was doing the best I could do."
And she thought you were playing
around. She thought I was playing. And from that day forward, I mean, in church, my lips are moving, but I'm not singing.
That's it, because you're
I remember Miss Cooper.
You feel that on your knuckles, and you're like, nope, not supposed to sing. People think I'm playing around.
I was doing the best job I could do, you know? So I won't be caught singing.
Not a talent of yours.
And how my daughter and granddaughter got it, I must be from my wife.
So maybe for you, instead of karaoke, it's a lip sync.
Yeah, I could do that. I could handle that.
All right, we'll do it lip sync just for you.
Yeah.
On account of your traumatic experience with Miss Cooper.
Yeah, Miss Cooper, man, she was something. She was something.
All right, third question. This one's easier. What is your favorite meal or favorite dish?
Oh, man, I'll eat anything. Don't eat me first. You know, I mean, I will. That's what my grandmother said that about me one time. I just love to eat, especially sweets.
Okay.
You know, but if I had to pick.
So we're going straight for dessert.
Man, I'd do that first, and then I eat a steak, maybe.
Name a dessert then, since it was sweet.
Coconuts and coconut pie.
Coconut pie.
That's my favorite thing.
Favorite thing to eat is coconut pie.
Mm-hmm. All right. My grandmother used to make it for me.
You can slice that before you even get to the steak. That way you got plenty of room for it.
I love it. That's why I got a weight problem. You know? I do. I got to lose some weight.
Well, it's too late to stop now. Keep eating that coconut pie. All right. Third and final question. If you could attend any concert or performance of any singer, duo, band, any kind of performer of any kind, whether they are now dead or alive, whose concert would
Dolly
you want to go
to? Dolly Parton.
Well, you know, I figured with that quick one on the karaoke.
All Loretta Lynn.
Dolly Parton, one of those two.
I just love them.
They'll both be a concert.
Oh, man, they're
private,
something.
Private concert here. What was the name of the theater?
Piney Woods Palace.
So both Dolly Parton and Loretta Lynn at the Piney Woods Palace.
And Loretta Lynn was supposed to come to Piney Woods Palace one time. But her husband got sick and died.
Oh, no.
And she had to cancel.
Yeah, well, obviously, yeah.
Dew, or whatever his name was.
All right, well, thanks for letting us get to know you.
Oh, yeah.
This Louisiana episode of Small Town Podcast is produced in partnership with the Louisiana Municipal Association and is sponsored by Louisiana Economic Development. LMA and LED invite you to visit and enjoy the small towns of Louisiana. Small Town Podcast is supported by the Douglas Coffee County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Authority. If you are seeking a vibrant community with great entertainment, recreational opportunities, a low cost of living, and a strong local economy, then you should check out the City of Douglas and Coffee County, Georgia. Visit coffeegachamber.com to find out why the Douglas Coffee County community is a great place to visit and an even better place to call home. Irwinomics is the producer of Small Town Podcast. We also handle digital production and marketing for small businesses that help small towns survive and thrive. In today's global and very digital world, your digital presence is just as important as your physical presence, if not more so. Irwinomics helps clients with all aspects of digital communications, from website creation and maintenance, social media management, email lists and newsletters, digital content creation, including audio and video production, and making sure that all of these things are working together to build your business beyond the city limits and county lines, so you can focus on keeping your small town community strong and vibrant. For more information and to see how Irwinomics can help guide you in growing your business, go to Irwinomics.com or contact us through Small Town Podcast. That's IRWINOMICS.com. Irwinomics, helping small town business thrive.
All right, we talked about, I guess, things have changed over time. You've had a population decline, but driving through getting here, talking to you about some of the things going on, this is still a great small town. And I saw actually some signs. It looks like I just missed it this year, but I bet it's an annual thing. Talk about some of the local events or local festivals that go on. Tell me about that. Is it the Jamboree?
Jamboree.
Yeah.
It's a Piney Woods Jamboree.
Piney Woods Jamboree.
We have it on the second Saturday of every month.
And it's every month.
Every month.
Here, I was thinking it was like an annual thing.
No,
it's a month.
No. Every month.
You guys can't have good enough time just once a year, so you do it 12 times a year.
Well, you know, if you get it in people's mind that second Saturday,
yeah.
I mean, they're going to come.
And if they miss one, they'll just come to the next
one.
There we go.
And it's local talent, and it's unbelievable talent. I mean, my granddaughter sings at it. And,
okay, good.
naturally, but it's some unbelievable talent.
And you don't sing at it.
I do not.
Okay,
no,
so make sure everyone knew that wasn't something they had to worry about. Since you've already told us
I'll
how bad.
I'll speak at it, but I won't sing at it.
You welcome everyone, and then introduce your granddaughter.
Right. That's right. But we have that every month, and we've been doing that for about a year now.
Okay.
But for many, many years now, we've always had the Lumberjack Festival. It's the second Saturday in October of every year. We've had it for at least 30 years now.
Okay.
It stemmed from lumberjack activities like wood splitting and you know, different things.
Well, that was your high school mascot, and also obviously it was big industry.
And the paper mill and. So that's where it came from that. But it's still a big festival.
Yeah.
And we have it in the RV park. We have an RV park here where you can come and use our RV park anytime during the year. You want to park it there. It's a really nice facility.
I imagine. And I've heard northern Louisiana, I guess more specifically northwestern Louisiana, referred to as the Piney Woods.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got the Piney Woods Jamboree. You had a paper mill.
Everything's connected to
the sawmill,
the pine tree.
Well, and I was going to ask how much of that still remains. Yes, a large paper mill factory. Mm-hmm. Is not here anymore, and that put a big hit. But I imagine the timber industry is still a pretty big thing
big time,
here.
Big time.
So you still got some sawmills and
we do.
So the lumberjack identity is still there, even though that's not your school mascot anymore.
Right.
Even though it's still on the water tower.
Right. Yeah, we have a tie mill north of town. It's a huge lumber yard there. There's a lot of wood industry. The mills that are close to here, they get the timber from here, and then they take it to the mills near here.
Yeah.
So it's still a big
part of your
industry.
Who you
a lot
are.
Of loggers and a lot of a lot of that kind of thing. So
that's still fitting that's still such a big festival.
Right.
30 years later.
And different communities have right around here. We all try to support each other. Sarepta has their festival. Haynesville has the Butterfly Festival. Minden. They have a huge St. June event every year.
Okay.
We all try to be involved in that. So we try to do things together. The mayor of Minden and I are good friends, and we try to bring the two towns together because as we go along, these distances become shorter, and it's not that big a deal to go to Minden or go to Spring Hill.
Right.
So it used to be, but it's not
anymore.
Right,
it was a big deal to go to town once a week, and now you go to town three times a day. Yeah.
We tried to support each other. We're part of the Main Street program.
Yep.
The state of Louisiana has a Main Street program.
I met Miss Linda
before
we sat down. Yeah, she's the Main Street manager.
There's 27 cities in the state that qualify to be in that program, and we're one of them. Minden is one of them.
I think Winsboro is another one because when I visited them in a previous season, we talked to their Main Street manager.
Their job is to promote. And it's a part of the city budget.
Mm-hmm.
But their job is to support Main Street through the help of the state of Louisiana and Ray Scriber, who is over that program.
Mm-hmm.
He comes up and advises her and sends her to school. And they have conventions, which we support. and brings back that information of what little small towns can do to a main street. And we're all in the same boat, basically. You can drive through any of these little main streets, and it's just like they're all the same. And so what do you do to revitalize something like that in this situation? Well, they give you those ideas.
Yeah.
And they do have some grants and stuff from the state that we can take advantage of, but you've got to have the person here
right.
to be able to get all that done.
Now, how long have you guys been a Main Street, official Main Street?
About 15 to 20 years, probably.
Okay. Was some of that, because you referenced the former mayor that was your mentor that kind of brought some of this.
He started it.
I imagine he was his.
It started through a state-funded program.
Okay.
But then, as a lot of state-funded programs do, it went away.
And then it's on the city to make sure to keep things
going.
You
want to keep this going or not? Well, yeah.
But were some of the things he did, you mentioned the theater and some of the activities and what he brought.
That was all just kind of under that Spring Hill and Main Street.
Yeah. What are some of the things that have gone on, I guess, you know, just in the last few years? It's been challenging because, while, like we already referenced, people did stay home and stay local, so that may have helped some of the small businesses, but there's still some challenges as far as you can't do the same kind of activities. Some of your festivals may have been at least minimized, if not kind of suspended for a year or two. So what's the last 3 to 4 years look like and maybe what's coming for the future on your Main Street?
Well, what the city has done, like when there's buildings that become vacant, I've taken on the thought pattern that if we could buy that building or have them donate it for a tax benefit,
sure.
then we can sell it or promote it or try to get something in there.
Yeah.
We just did it for the parish library. They donated it to this beautiful building. Well, the people that ended up with it have turned it into this unbelievable bistro kind of thing.
Oh, nice.
And you bring your stuff to sell there, you know, a flea market, but it's upgrade kind of deal. It's really nice. But she's doing well with that. If we wouldn't have done what we did, it would be a vacant building right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. It's really nice. And we've done that before. The Spring Theater, that's the biggest screen in the state of Louisiana.
Wow.
And we helped the guy that owns it, Adam Harris. We helped him. The city did, and I was the banker at the time, too.
Mm-hmm.
And he got that through a donation by the people that owned it. And we helped him remodel it. And, I mean, it's a really an asset to the city, you know.
Yeah,
kind of nostalgic asset.
Yeah.
But it's really pretty. That was another deal where the city got involved to keep these buildings full. We just had a new Mexican restaurant open downtown. We still got eyesores. We're still working.
You mean you're dealing with blight?
Yeah, we're still
working.
No
other small town has that issue. And no other city has that issue.
Blighted properties is another thing.
I think it's just hard because it's somebody else's property.
And I've been to conventions and stuff, and everybody's in the same boat. They don't.
Yeah.
It's so hard.
Yeah.
To go to a personal property and say we're going to tear this down. I mean, the law is tough on you when you try to do something
sure,
like that.
Sure.
But I figured out how to do it, and I do it in a legal way. And I've torn down now about 12 or 13 houses in strategic spots where when you drive through, you don't see that ugly bunch of dilapidated house. You know, you see a clean lot anyway.
Yeah.
And so I've done a lot of that, too.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and it's been real hard, but I did.
It's difficult, but that just one along a city block or in a neighborhood makes a huge difference because a cleared lot looks so much better than a dilapidated house. Yes, of course, we'd like a nice new house to be there. But the cleared lot, just the yard, the lot.
And see, we go in and maintain the lot. We mow the lot.
Right.
So
it becomes your responsibility, and you have to be careful about taking that on.
I know, but for the benefit of the town as a whole.
And I've had this conversation with several people. It's
blighted property. Oh, yeah. It's tough.
Well, the ideal would be for the property owner to take care and maintain the property.
Yeah. But
understanding that they're not doing that negatively affects everybody around them and the whole community.
Right.
But when they don't, the city or some other program
has to step
has no choice. But hey, if we're supposed to help maintain and make our whole community better, we've got to make up where someone else is kind of letting things go. And it's tough because there's some legal challenges, as there should be, because you don't want someone who just gets to go in and dictate what people have done to their personal property.
That's right.
There's a balance in there.
That's right.
And it's hard to find. It's hard to maintain. But it's got to be done because that's...
But we're working with that. Yeah. We're working downtown with Linda and Main Street. And we're working on the whole town as far as cleaning it up.
Yeah.
We've got one of our police officers. That's all she does. is write tickets.
Code enforcement types of thing.
And we do prosecute them. Yeah. So that's working because it gets around.
Oh, yeah. People find out.
Look, the neighbor had to pay $500. Oh, we ain't going to let that happen.
Right.
So
right.
Well, it works, but you got to work at it.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. What are the types of things? I'll ask you this just kind of broadly. If someone came to visit Spring Hill, what would you want to make sure that they either participated in, if it's an event other than the ones you've talked about, or a particular historic property or historic or cultural landmark?
Yeah.
What would you want to make sure someone saw or experienced?
Well, it's not in Spring Hill, but 5 miles from here, we have one of the biggest lakes in this part of the country.
Oh, wow.
7,000-acre lake.
Okay.
Lake Irwin. It was built by International Paper. They blocked off a little river mm-hmm. and made Lake Irwin so they could have water run the paper mill.
Right.
And ran it down to the
paper. It was for business purposes, but had a nice recreational benefit. Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
I think they call this state sportsman's paradise.
They do. And we've got it. You can hunt, you can fish, lakes everywhere. But that's a huge lake there. It's a lot of camps around the lake, a lot of beautiful homes around the lake. A lot of people live on the lake. It's just 5 miles from here. We had a camp on the lake. I grew up on the water up there, but it's a beautiful, beautiful place. We've got that. You know, a lot of people come here for that. Like I said, the RV park, people coming through here can stop. I think it's just a beautiful town. I mean, we've worked hard at it, but I'm proud of it that it is a pretty town when you're driving through.
Yeah.
You know, so. And at Christmas time, I spent a lot of money and time on, because the people, when I got elected, they said, we got to have some Christmas, you know.
Yeah, a little more Christmas lights.
I drug it out, boy. I did. I got some beautiful stuff out at Christmas. So, and people love it. They do.
Well, Mayor, as we start to close things out, I want to give you the same opportunity I've given all my guests and let you speak directly to the Small Town Podcast audience and tell them why they should come visit or maybe they should come move to Spring Hill, Louisiana.
Well, you know, a lot of people have moved to Spring Hill, Louisiana from California and all over. They get on the internet now and they look up the cost of living in Spring Hill, Louisiana.
A little lower here than California.
And they sell those houses in California for $500,000 and come here and buy a beautiful home for $100,000 and they can retire on their profit. We've had that happen a lot more than you'd think because it's a small town. It's a quiet town. There's no hardly any crime, and there's violence that you see and hear in the cities, even cities like Shreveport that we hear, you know, and it's just not here, thank goodness. But that's worth an awful lot when you go to bed at night and know that you're in a safe, real safe community. Our churches, we have so many beautiful churches. The school system's fantastic. I mean, and the hospital, we have a super hospital here, and you get all that going for you, and that's a nice place to live. I mean, you know, you have the emergency room at the hospital in case something were to happen. People like to move to the bigger communities because the hospitals and all. Well, we've got that covered here, but I just think the things we're doing here to make it a beautiful retirement kind of town, I think you'd love to live here. I know you would, and the people are super friendly. I know there's a few.
There's always a few.
And they do stand out. But we try to keep them cooped up. Yeah. But I try to take care of them. But 99.9% of the people are fabulous people. But we all kind of grew up together here. A lot of folks are still here that were here many years ago. And they want you to come. Want you to go to church with them. And they want you to go to school and raise your kids here. It's a wonderful place to raise children. We'd love to have you. That's all I can say, you know, and I think you'd feel it when you came. I think you'd feel that we want to have you.
It's been very welcoming to me. So
good deal.
Mayor Ray Huddleston, thanks for joining us on the Small Town Podcast.
Thank you. Appreciate y'all.
Well, small towners, that'll do it for this episode of Small Town Podcast. I want to thank Mayor Ray Huddleston for talking with me. I also want to say thank you to the Louisiana Municipal Association and Louisiana Economic Development for their partnership on this episode. As always, I want to thank our season sponsors, the Georgia Municipal Association, Consolidated Pipe, the Douglas Coffee County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Authority, and the Greater Harrelson Chamber. Thank you all for supporting us as we explore and share great small towns. I'll talk to you soon, and y'all are welcome to come to Osceola anytime.
Small Town Podcast is an Irwinomics production. We release new episodes every other week featuring small towns through stories of the people who live and lead there. Our podcast episodes are made possible with editing assistance from Resonate Recordings, who also mixes and masters all of our episodes. You can subscribe to Small Town Podcasts on iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, and the next episode will download while you sleep. You can also leave us a rating and review, which would help us reach new listeners. We would really appreciate it. Beyond our episodes, you can engage with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also learn more about us and the small towns we visit by visiting our website, www.smalltownpodcast.com. We'd love to show all you small towners out there some great images from the small towns we visit and let you know about the festivals and events you can participate in. Thanks again for listening, and we hope to see you real soon, because there's no place like Osceola, Georgia.
We stand adjourned.